Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Vov. And we are holding still on daf Kuf Hei Amud Beit. And we got up to, we were discussing the question of the why in the world we would consider somebody who breaks things to be doing something that is mitaken, because he's doing it for his yetzer hara. That's not a tikkun, that's a kilkul. So the last thing that we came out with, we were talking about a case where somebody is doing it as an act in order to be able to establish a pattern of behavior in children or households and so on. We got up to Reb Shimon ben Pasi, Reb Yeshua ben Levi, which is smack bang in the middle of the long lines. Now, the reason that we are having this discussion that we're about to have here is because you'll recall that we spoke about the issue of Kriya. And Kriya, we spoke about Kriya al-Hamit. And the Gemara went through, because of this, all of the different possibilities in which a person would be chayav in Kriya, even if it were not meto. And we had to figure out what the case would be where it was neither an Adam Kosher, nor a Talmud Chacham, nor was he Omed al Amita b'tshazotzas neshama. And that leads us now to also a sense of the general response that a human being is responsible to have when it comes to his connection to someone even that he doesn't know who died. So Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pasi, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Mishum bar Kapara, Kol Hamorid d'maot al Adam Kasher, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sofram, Uminichan v'Beit Ginazav. Anybody who cries over the death of just an Adam Kosher, not somebody that he knows, and not somebody that's his Rebbe in any way, but just that he's an Adam Kosher, HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually counts those tears and keeps them in his special place so that it should be schus for the person. Shenemar, nodi sefarta ta sima dimati benotcha halo besifratecha. So the pashtus of nodi means, of course, a lashon of novenad, somebody who moves around. But we're understanding it as nodi, my pain and what I went through, that you yourself counted, and therefore take my tears and put them in a special container and keep them on account. So you see from here that a person who is going to be have a tremendous chus for crying those tears. And furthermore, Amr Rabbi Yudam Rav Kol Mitat Tzel Bespeto Shel Chochom Roi Lekovro Bechayav, Shenemar Veyikru Oto Begvul Nachlato Betim Natserach Asher Bahar Efraim Mitzvon Nahar Ga'ash. Anybody who doesn't put his whole heart into the hesped of a Talmud Chochom who was Nifter deserves to be buried in his lifetime. As it says by Yoshua, now we don't find, as Tosus points out, we don't find anywhere that there was a national mourning for the death of Yoshua, the way we find by Moshe and Aaron. And that's very striking, because throughout Sefer Yoshua, we have all of these comparisons about the relationship of Yoshua and Moshe and the dinim that he has, the way people would have to treat him. And all of a sudden, at his death, we find it's, you know, basically ignored. And then when it comes to the Kfura, it mentions that he was buried in Timnat Serach next to a volcano, which is like, what? Next to a volcano? What does that have to do with anything? Somebody's not properly muted. So that teaches us, Melamed, that the Har itself was Ragash Alayem Har Lahorgon. So because they weren't maspid properly, and we don't find any bechia, so it was as if the mountain itself was about to destroy them and bury them alive under it. Many are connecting this to the idea of Kofalem Har Chagigit, which of course was because of Teresh Shebaal Peh, and that, as the Medrash Tanchuma points out, and here this was Yehoshua, who was the one that was Malami Teresh Shebaal Peh, was the beginning of the Kabbalah from Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, specifically, the Har that would have put them back into that matzav of Kof Aleihem Har in the ignoring of the value of that Torah. Om Reb Chiya Bar Ava Amar Rabbi Yochanan Kolam Mitatzel Bespedo Shel Chochom Eino Ma'arich Yamim. Somebody who doesn't really care about the life of a Talmud Chochom and doesn't put his heart into being maspid, the Mida Kenegan Mida is that his life is also can be cut short for the same way that he didn't care about the cutting short of the life of the Chacham. How do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always responds to me to connect with me? Shenamar b'sa'a sa'a b'shalcha terivena. B'sa'a sa'a, we always darshan as meaning sa'a b'sa'a. So in other words, that which is suitable, the mida, as far as the mida, b'sa'a shuhu madad, kach madadim lo, and b'shalcha, the time that it comes a din, that din terivena, that'll be the time, the way in which it will be drawn from him. How can you say that this is, since we learned before that people were mitatzel in the hesped of Yoshua, so then we ought to find that the Zekanim who were mitatzlim had shortened lives. And yet it says in the Pasuk, Vayavdu ha'amat Hashem ko yimei Yoshua, and then it goes out of its way to say, so, according to what you're saying, how can we have on the one hand they were mitatzel with the Hargash, and you claiming that anybody who is mitatzel indeed will be nitzkatzer yomav, and over here it says herichu yomav? Omar leis, Reb Yochanan said, Reb Chiya bar Avayva, boy, you guys from Bavel, can't you read? It says herichu yamim. That means Yamim erichu, shanim lo erichu. The meaning of arichas yomim is not that he lives a long time. Arichas yomim is the getter of the Gemara Numa, erich yomim ushnot chayim. Well, over there the Gemara learns that there's a special period in a person's life that can be called years of life, where things are going well. That's called arichas yomim. But in terms of the actual time lived, that's not what it's talking about. And that's why it doesn't say Asher Harichu Shanim. Wait a minute. So you're telling me that when we read Laman Yirbu Yamechem Vimei Venechem, that means you're only going to be Marich Yamim, but not Shanim. And this is what the Torah is telling us is going to be the result of our keeping all of the mitzvahs? I mean, come on. No. Obviously, says Rabbi Yochanan, and it's contextual. If we're talking about a bracha, and that's the whole point of the bracha, then it wouldn't be there in order to tell you just to be Medayik only the Yamim. It means the full sense of arachas yomim, both in terms of the actual time lived and the quality of life. If one of a family of brothers die, then yidagu kol achim kulam. Everyone has to realize that their position in this tragedy had been taken into consideration, and therefore they are vulnerable themselves. Echad mibnei chabura shemet, and if it's a group of friends, and one of them dies, tidag kol chabura kula. Now some say this is where the gadol of the chabura, the gadol of the family, died, because that shows that midas hadin was actually shalet on them. And the others learn on the contrary. It's talking about the mate katan. It's when the small, because usually when things go bad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu starts small, so to speak. So bira'ah, we're potchim in akatan. And therefore, that's a sign that you better do teshuvah fast. Okay, continues on the Mishnah to say that kol hamekalkalin piturin. Now Rabbi Abohu gets up and he says to Rabbi Yochanan, in front of Rabbi Yochanan, he quotes a braita. He says, kol hamekalkalin piturin, which so far sounds okay, because that's the lashon of the Mishnah. But then he adds, chutz michovel v'maavir. There's only two special exceptions to this case. Someone who causes chavala, wounding, or someone who burns something. Omar Leis, Rabbi Yochanan said, will you please, if you want to talk nonsense, you can go outside and preach it to the squirrels. Okay? Not in here. So poke to an elevra, chovel v'maavir in a Mishnah. That's ridiculous. Cancel that braita. I won't have it here. And im timtzalomar Mishnah, if you'll find somebody insisting that it's nogeya, I'll tell you what it means. It would be talking about over here that there was some type of issue that was actually also a tikkun of a small sort. So in other words, it would be the chovel. So let's say the guy is going to be using any blood that is spilled, he's going to be using to give to his dog. Or mavir, the guy wants to make a barbecue later, so he needs the charcoal. But that type of thing, that would be true. I mean, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that in that case, it would be a malacha shena tzricha legufa, and if there is some element in it that is a tikkun, that's enough. But generally speaking, that's not how we paskin. Wait, what's Rabbi Avuah thinking over here? I understand. A Mishnah says Beferis, Kolam Kalkulim Peturi, and he comes along and he says, except for? What? The Mishnah didn't say anything about except for? No. The way that Rabbi Avuah understood it, and the reason that he felt that this is acceptable, is because he understood that this would be true according to Rabbi Shimon. So he said like this, the Mishnah is going Aliba to Rabbi Yehuda. The Braita is Rabbi Shimon. And the point over here is that according, now Lemaisa Rashi learns like this, we don't know of any kind of Machlokis Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon that revolves around whether Mekalkalin are Potter or Chayev when it comes to Chovel Umavir. So like, where would this be coming from? Therefore, Rashi understands that this Gemara is taking for granted that the overall machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about whether Malacha Shein Etzrich L'Gufa, you're Chayev on or not, has to lie behind our assumption that there's such a machlokas. And therefore, he learns as follows, that Rabbi Shimon would be learning my time at the Rabbi Shimon, but it's Yitzchak Krol Mishra Mila. Why do we need a special pasuk, an extra yom for Yom HaShmini, to tell me that even if that day comes out on Shabbos, nonetheless, there is a mitzvah that's Doicha Shabbos of doing a bris mila on Shabbos? What is wrong with doing a bris mila on Shabbos? Anyway, all that you would be doing would be a chavalah. So you're causing a wound, and that is a mekalkel. The fact that there is some other issue that comes out of that, namely that, okay, you've got a child who is now mahul or whatever, but that's not in the act per se of cutting skin. So that would be a malacha shein etzricha l'gufa. Ah, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, okay, so what? So malacha shein etzricha l'gufa, if it wouldn't be for the pasuk, I wouldn't be able to do mila on Shabbos, right? But Rabbi Shimon says, now, wait a minute. I mean, why wouldn't I be able to do Milo even if I don't have a pasuk? What, because the Rabbanan Aser, the Malach Shein Etzrich L'Gufa, so we would think that you don't do the mitzvah of Milo D'Oraisa? Of course not. Since the Torah says that you need to have a pasuk to be matir, clearly the pasuk is telling you that in this particular case, the Malacha consists of the Kilkel. And that is what the Braita essentially was saying, that call him a Kalkulin Apturi, but not Chovel, because Chovel, I see from Mila that it's not true. And therefore, if we need Krola Mishra Mila, Mashma, that any other Chabalah, you would have been Chayavan. And furthermore, how do I know that this is true about making a fire? Because since the Torah said by the din of the Srefa of Abad Kohen that was Zinta, that you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos, and that Bezdin is not allowed to heat the lead to be able to be Mekayim, the mitzvah of Sreif of Abad Kohen. So you see from there that even though, I mean, heating the lead is not considered to be something that would be a melocha tzricha l'gufa, I just need the hot lead in order to be using it for something else, but heating the lead per se is not a useful thing. So you see that generally speaking, Mavir Ba'alma would be Chayev. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't understand what the problem is. Who cares? It's anyway, you're doing something that's very useful. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, look, that's called a mitaken. Now, a mitaken doesn't have to be a total and absolute mitaken. A mitaken would mean that there's some useful thing that comes from it, because that's the din, according to Rabbi Yehuda, of even a malacha shein etzrich l'gufa. So basically, would it not be considered to be a tikkun if you would be mitaken, let's say, a dishwasher? So what's the difference if you're mitaken at penis? It's exactly the same thing. If there's a tikkun that's involved, so then that's tikkun. So you're saying, I don't need to have, for this particular purpose, chavola. The chavola is part of what I need to do to make the tikkun. So mali letaken mila, mali letaken kli, it's all the same. Same thing is true about the lead. Mali levashel petila, mali levashel samanim. It makes no difference, because if you would be cooking something and it's useful, that cooking is useful. So then the same thing is true over here. It's useful to cook the lead. Now look, there's a tremendous difference between the way Rashi understands this sugya and Tosfos understands this sugya. Because, I mean, what we're saying over here is that cooking the lead, and that is considered to be normal bishul, even though that's not what he needs the bishul for. He doesn't need it because the lead is improved through cooking, which is what how Rashi understands it, that l'maisa the lead is improved through cooking. And that would be sufficient for Reb Yehuda to consider it at least a tikkun of sorts. And therefore, vis-a-vis what it is that I'm doing, I only need to find some element of tikkun that would allow me to say that even though it's a malach shein tzrich l'guf, I would be chayev. The problem, the obvious problem is, first of all, I mean, why would Reb Yochanan say, you can read this braita outside, don't say it in here? What, because he holds it, Rabbi Shimon, so because of that, he holds that like Rabbi Yehuda, so because of that, he says, you can't, don't you dare say something like that, because that's only true, only but Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara asks this elsewhere and says that you can't say that just because somebody says a braita like somebody else, that he's not supposed to say it in the Beis HaMedrash. Because of that, Tosfos has to learn that the entire issue is nothing to do with the question of whether Malach HaShein HaTzricha L'Gufa is Chayev or Pater. And it's just purely coincidental that we happen to know from just a Kabbalah that we have, a Gemara that we have, that they also argue in this particular sugya. Because according to Tosfos, the very fact that something is a mitzvah would be ipso facto a tikkun of some kind. And therefore, we would not need, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we would not need to know in terms of Malach HaShein HaTzricha L'Gufa. So he argues on Rashi totally, because we've already seen something that is being done for a mitzvah is considered to be tikkun. That itself is a tikkun of sorts. And therefore, the idea over here would only be a number of other possibilities, which makes this a bit complex. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, the only reason that a Rabbi Yehuda would hold its mekalkel is because he is actually not going to get a tikkun on the spot from these things, and only something that he's going to get on the spot. So in other words, let's say that he requires this dam. He's only going to get the dam for his kelev after he makes the chabura. He's only going to be able to get the ashes after he lights the fire and the fire goes out. So because of that, that's how he understands the difference in the cases of what Rabbi Yochanan was tining about Bechovo b'tzarech l'kavbo or Mavir tzarech l'afro. Okay, but we can learn this, the sugya like Rashi. It flows beautifully, but it's good to remember that there are tremendously different ways of learning the sugya. Okay, the next thing that we had in the Mishnah was the Shiur HaMalabein, and then the Mishnah went through every last thing that has part of this din is all the same shear. So if it has anything to do with the preparation of the wool or the threads or the ariga, the preparation pre-ariga, the actual shear of the ariga itself, it's all the same shear, and that is the shear of sit hakaful. Rav Yosef used to show the sit as an actual sit and then double it, meaning he would hold up his first two fingers like this, and then he would go like that to show that it's doubled. Masha Enkin, Rav Chiya Bar Ami, said that you don't have to do that. The shear between the thumb and the first finger is the same as double the shear of a normal sit, which would mean that we've got really three different, we have the zeret, which goes all the way from this little finger to the thumb, and then we have the sit, which is the first two fingers, and then we have the distance between the thumb and the first finger, which would be the sit hakaful. Now, there are many who taina that this doesn't make any sense, because if it's the same shear, who cares what the difference is, whether you're doing it kaful or single. But remember, gentlemen, that always when you do things kaful, as the Gemara has pointed out elsewhere, there's always a little bit of additional, which comes about because you've done the measurement twice instead of including it all within one measurement. So that may be the difference, or it may simply the Gemara is giving you two different ways of how it is that you could get to the shear. In any event, it certainly is time for our favorite Capitan, because we're really in a hurry tonight to get to Doc's house so we could join him for that delicious spread that he keeps hiding behind his body there and gives us a little smile as if, yes, yes, you're all invited, knowing full well the difficulties we're going to have in getting there in time before he finishes it all. But go ahead, Rich, we'll try. Move it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Now, what did we have to do after we finished the first layer and the second layer of the Yiriot HaMishkan? Well, we had to do some heavy-duty trapping because we needed, on the upper level of the Mishkan, we had Orot Techashim. And those Orot Techashim make us discuss in the next Mishnah, how do we actually trap, as Pooh would have it, how do you trap a heffalum? Now, that's a serious issue. And because of that, we have to decide what trapping would be. Because remember, as Piglet pointed out, after you trap the heffalum, what exactly are you going to do with it? Now, this is a serious problem, because if you do trap one of these techashim, I mean, what if it's this mammoth, you know? So you've got it now in this big trap. Okay, what are you going to do? So that's what the Mishnah worries about. What do we mean by trapping? It turns out that by trapping, we don't mean get this thing into some place where I can claim I've trapped it. You've got to be able to actually get it. And because of that, there's a machlokas in our Mishnah about what actually would be considered to be the shear of trapping. So Rabbi Yehuda says, look, if you're going to trap a bird, and you get a bird into a closet, and you slam the closet door on it, that would be considered to be tzeda. And if you get a deer into a house, you close the door in the house. Remember, a house in the Gemara terms means a room. So you trap a deer in a room. That's considered to be trapped. Whereas the Chachamim say, I agree with you about the Tzipor L'Migdal, yes, but a tzvi does not have to be trapped literally in a room so that it's right next to you. Even if you would get a tzvi into your yard and you close the door into a garden or your front yard or into a vivarium, that would all be a vivarium, essentially, as the word implies, a place where you store live animals in a way that allows them to live. You would be chayev because that itself is not considered to be mechusar tzeda. We're going to see what defines all of those concepts as we go along. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, well, you can't just say a word, vivarian, right? I mean, local are vivarian shavim. They're not all the same. Ze haklal, mechusar tzeda is patur. She'eno mechusar tzeda chayav. Look, it's not really the idea of what you call the place and what the name of the cage is. The idea is, can you or can you not now grab that animal? If you've only managed to put it into a game park, I mean, what are you going to say? That now it's trapped? You're going to have just as much trouble catching it now in the game park that you did before. So who cares if there's a big fence around the game park? That is not considered to be trapped, which is pretty obvious. Says the Gemara, it's a little strange that when it comes to the Mishnah, in Beta, we're over there, we're talking about what you could do on Yontif. Now, normally, remember that anything that is required for Oichol Nefesh is mutter to do on Yontif. Is it mutter to go fishing on Yontif? Now, this is one of Richie's pet peeves. Can you go fishing since you need the fresh fish in order to be able to eat your Yontif meal? And the answer to that is no. I'm sorry, Rich. But you cannot go fishing. You cannot go fishing. Why? Because you could have gone fishing Erev Yontif and put the fish into a bucket, right? And they would have lived perfectly well in the bucket, which means you would have already done your tzeda. It'd still be nice and fresh for you to cook them up in the morning of Yontif. And you could have done your tzeda without any loss of quality. Erev Yontif. The same thing is true of any of these animals. So therefore, when it comes to trapping on Yontif, you're not allowed to take dagim out of a vivarium. Now, obviously, a vivarium for fish is not the same thing as a vivarium for mammals, and a vivarium for fish would essentially be a pond in which the fish can live. So you're not allowed to do that on Yontif. And not only that, but you're not allowed to feed them if they're in the pond. Now, the reason for that is because, according to Tosfos, let's take Rashi first. According to Rashi, it's because they're mukta. And anything that mukta, that is mukta, you're not allowed to be toreach for. Tosis proves that that is not the case. And we're going to see, actually, that you are allowed to feed things that are mukta. But the sole determining issue is whether it is considered to be in your reshus or not. And that is defined by what is considered to be nitzod midiraisa. If it's nitzod midiraisa, then it's considered to be mizonotem alecha. It's your business to feed them. And because of that, you're allowed to feed them on Shabbos. If it isn't something that's your business to feed, and you're just this bleeding heart person that loves to go out and poison deers by giving them cake, then that is actually not allowed to go out into the field and do that kind of thing on Shabbos. Okay, so you're not allowed to feed them, but you are allowed to trap a chaya and an oaf, and you are allowed to feed them. So that doesn't make any sense, because actually we show clearly that it says beferish there too for aminu vivarion shel chayot v'shel ofot v'shel dagim. None of them ain't sadim and beyom tov ain't notim l'tayim mizonot. So how do you explain that? We have a direct contradiction, chaya achaya, and we have a direct contradiction of the ofot and the ofot. I mean, the only thing that's the same over here in between these two sources is the question of what about fish? Answers the Gemara. Look, I mean, one problem doesn't bother me that much, okay? Because I have a built-in answer. I just had a Mishnah that gives a different definition of tzeda according to Rabbi Yehuda, or tzeda of a deer according to the Rabbanan. So I mean, I could easily say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, what we're talking about is if it's in the yard and it's not in the house. And according to the Rabbanan, even if it's in the yard, it's already considered to be trapped. Okay, so maybe one was talking about that type of vivarium, the other one was talking about the other. I don't know. But it's not going to help me. Because to say Har Rabbi Yehuda Rabbanan is still not going to address the problem of the birds, right? So Ofot Alfot is going to be a problem anyway. We're going to have to answer. So, I mean, what you could say is that maybe when it comes to the bird, I could simply say that it depends if there is a roof over the vivarium or not. So Lo Kasha Ha Vivar Mikora Ha Vivar She'eno Mikora. So if it's roofed, so then a bird is trapped. Why? Because even though it's big, but it's got a roof to it, so the bird can't really get away. And the other case is talking about where it does not have a roof, because then we don't really view it as trapped, because the bird can get away. But that's not true. It's not true because, look, it says in our Mishnah, and it wasn't even the subject of a machlokas, it says in our Mishnah, in the same case that if you get the deer into the house, the din would be that the deer is trapped according to one and not according to the other. But in that same case, if you got the bird into the house, it would not be trapped unless you get it into the closet. Isn't that right? Now, the house has got a roof over it, and nonetheless, you're telling me a bird in a house is not a bird in a hand. So if that's the case, you're not going to be able to say this, that it makes a difference if there's a roof over it or not. So clearly the Mishnah says makes no difference because a bayit is mikura and bein l'Rabbi Yehuda, bein l'Rabbanan, tzipor only is considered to be trapped l'migdal in a closet in the bayit not. So you're going to have to explain what the solution is to the tziporim at the least. I mean, you want to insist that one is Rabbi Yehuda and one is Rabbanan according in the case of the tzvi, fine. But what about the tzipor? Omer Rabba Baravuna, well, what we could say is that here we're talking about a tzipor dror. A tzipor dror is the kind of bird where the Mishnah is referring to. It's the kind of bird that will not change its behavior even when it's an inside of an enclosed area or a home. There are some birds that will accept the fact that basically they are now in a house. And they don't go crazy to start flying away from you from corner to corner. A tzipor dror, which is one of these wild birds, will not accept any type of control. That's the lashon of the Gemara. Elsewhere, enem mekablim marut. They do not accept a level of control. And that's exactly why they're called. Enem mekabelet marut, detana devei Rabbi Shmuel, lama nikra shma tzipor dror. Why indeed do we use the word free, dror? That word comes from dira, And that is, this bird, wherever it is, does not change its behavior. It lives where it wants, and it laughs at you who thinks that just because it's in the house, it's going to act different than if it's in the field. And it's dara, it lives the same in a house, but by it the way it would live outdoors in the field. So memela, it would depend what type of bird we're talking about. So there is a bird, in fact, that would be considered to be entrapped in a covered vivarium. And there's a tzipor that is not going to be trapped. Even if it's inside your room, it's going to keep finding its way away from you. You're going to have a heck of a time trying to catch it. And actually, once you're already willing to say that, so then chaya achayan amilokashi, you don't have to say that type of thing at all. I mean, you could say, instead of making it part of the machlokas, we could simply say that there's two cases. One is referring to a large vivarium, and one is referring to a small vivarium. And we already saw that, of course, it's a function of the size. What would define that size? Echidami biver gadol and echidami biver katan. Well, I mean, big and small doesn't give me much information. So what exactly would be the definition of big or small in this case over here? We'd have to give some type of idea of what you're calling me. Omer Rav Ashi, I'll tell you. It's very simple. It's all a function of how easy it is to get that animal. So, kol echa d'royit batre, any place where you can chase the animal, umotile b'chachkia, and in one jump you can get hold of it. You don't have to start running around and trying to trap it and so on. And you're able to get the animal, that is called a bever katan. Anything larger than that is a bever gadol. Or, I mean, I can give you another explanation. I can tell you, and Tosfos says this obviously is based on some knowledge of standards that we are not aware of, because otherwise it makes no sense at all. There was obviously a standard of height in a normal wall, and there was obviously a standard of time of day at which things were measured. I mean, and possibly noon, I don't know. But the point is that it's not a useful shiur for us because we simply don't have the data. So it would be wherever something is so small that the shadows of the walls can touch the other. So, you know, I'm how tall is the wall? What time of the day? I mean, it's a ridiculous kind of shiur. So wherever the shadows can touch each other is considered to be a bever katan. Anything else is a bever gadol. Or maybe the idea is like this. If there's no place that there's a corner in which the animal could try to run into, and then you'd have to try to get there, and then it comes out and goes into another corner, then that's considered to be a bever katan. But if there's any place where the animal can hide or jump into, then it's considered to be a bever gadol. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, look, not all vivarium are the same. Well, that's the halacha, it's just like that. What do you mean the halacha is just like that? We just had a whole big sugya in the Gemara that made it clear that nobody ever argued on that. They were just discussing what the size is. I mean, but obviously it depended on the size. That's a completely irrelevant statement. You say halacha. What does that mean, halacha, the cloud of pleading? You know somebody that's arguing. Says Rav Yosef, so that's even better. You know, what do you care? Come on, stop being so pedantic over here. I said halacha's like him, and you're telling me, well, yes, yes, nobody argues. Okay, so then for sure the halacha's like him. Ha ha. Ah, come on. Gemara's muratate. What is Gemara about over here? It's like a pop tune? So I'm supposed to repeat over here, Rav Yosef Omer, halacha kamoso. It's idiotic. You don't say things that are not meaningful, okay? This is not about songs on a hit parade. Tana Rabbana. Hatzatzvi suma v'yashen. Somebody who traps a deer which is blind or it's sleeping, you're still chayav. But on the other hand, if the deer is lame or if it's old, can't move around, or if it's sick, he's potter. Armalei Abayla Rav Yosef, I don't understand what the difference is. I mean, and if it's fast asleep or it can't see where you're coming, I mean, why? Mamanav Shach, the same thing. You should be either chayav or potter. No, not true. A blind deer or a sleeping deer can suddenly sense that you're coming and jump up and run, right? But the last cases, the lame deer, the sick deer, the old deer, they're not going to be able to move away, even if they sense that you're coming. Hey, the thing about sick, it says in a bright, and I like this, it says, if you trap a sick deer, you would be chayev. How come the other bright says, if you trap a sick deer, you would be potter? And the answer is obvious. I mean, Omer of Sheshes. I mean, when you say sick, there's different types of sick, aren't there? I mean, lokash, abakola machmas ishta. But say a deer is sick, meaning it's got a high fever and so on. That doesn't mean it's not going to run away. But you can find a chola machmat uftsana, that it's sick and it can't budge, either because of it's tired out, it's overworked, it's undernourished, whatever it is. But it can't move, at least not rapidly enough to get away from you. Tan Rabbanan. Suppose somebody goes out to trap locusts or gizin, which is also a type of locust that is mutter to eat, according to Rashi. Not everybody agrees, but okay. Even if they're not kosher to eat, then you could still trap them for sale. So it wouldn't necessarily be that they have to be kosher to eat, something the Rishonim learn. Or he traps hornets, or he traps mosquitoes on Shabbos. So he would be chayiv. Divrei Rebbe Meir, where the Chachamim say, no, tzeda means the tzeda of something which is a trappable species, a type of species which people do not trap. That's not even included in the malach of tzeda. The malach of tzeda consists of putting something around a living thing. Tzeda consists of using trapping in order to get something which is the derech to me, for me to have through tzeda. Therefore, this is not even tzeda, because it's not the derech to be tzadda. And therefore, it would be potter. Tanya idach. Now, there is funny, because there's another brisa that says, hatzad chagavim b'sha'at hatal. If you trap these locusts during the time when there's dew, then you're potter. But if you trap them during a heat wave, b'sha'at hashrav, then you would be chayev, because when there's a lot of moisture on the ground, these animals don't usually move about. And because of that, they're considered to be nitzot. Rashi says because they're blinded. Okay, whatever. But it doesn't, it's not active. You may be aware of the fact that it's recently been discovered that the temperature is a fundamental component of how active these kind of things are, particularly in these outbreaks of cockroaches. We have these flying roaches, and it turns out that as the temperature goes up, and temperatures have been rising, places that never had things like this suddenly get this. The moment that it goes over a particular temperature, these things go crazy, start flying about like nuts, and so because of that, b'sha'at hashrav, there you would be chayev because they certainly do not stay in one place. Whereas Elazar ben Ma'avai Omer, look, if there's a swarms, then you're always potter, because when it's swarming, the whole point of a swarm, you stick out your hand, you can get 50 of them, you don't have to catch anything. So because of that, you would be potter. Now, it's not clear what Elazar ben Ma'avai was talking about. Is Elazar ben Ma'avai going on the Reisha? And he's saying, even if it was b'shas hatal, you would only be potter b'shas hatal if they're also swarming. Or is he going on the Seifa? And then he's going Lakula, and he's saying, even if it was B'shas HaShrav, if they're swarming, it's not considered to be trapping. Toshma, Hatzat Chagavim B'sha'at HaTal Patur B'sha'at HaShrav Chayav. And here Elazar ben Ma'avai makes it very clear what he's saying. Afilu B'sha'at HaShrav, I am being Mekel, Ima Yum B'kachotu Ba'ot. If they're swarming, then it would be Potter. And now comes the next, Sir Richard.
Sorry.
So let us say, and this of course is a mission we had before, a tzvi shenichnas labayit, a deer walks into the house looking for something to eat, and somebody sees a great opportunity to have some venison tonight. And so he goes ahead and he slams the door and he locks the door, and now the tzvi is in the house. So then he would be chayev, because even though he wasn't the one who brought the tzvi into the house, but lemaisa, the trapping, the act itself is preventing the deer from getting out of a trap. So that would be the same as trapping. Suppose two people went ahead and slammed the door, then they would be potter, and this is where we brought it up before, when we first started discussing the issue about, if one person can do it and two people do it, and that would be the machlokas. Remember, according to Rabbi Shimon, he's potter because Rabbi Shimon had three miyutim, even when ze yochol veze no yochol. So that's the machlokas we're going to have, where ze veze no yochol, we have nonetheless a third pasuk, ba'asota nefesh achat. Remember, three separate miyutim, which the machlokas, how to learn those miyutim. Okay, so if lo yochol achad linol, and you need two people to slam the door, according to the Tanakama, you would be chayiv, because they use one of those miyutim, remember, to tell me the case where somebody did it, borat beidin. And according to Rabbi Shimon, you're potter, because this is three separate miyutim. Amr b'yamei baraba, amr shmuel. Now, this is all very nice that we're talking about deer, okay? But what about lion hunting? Aha! So now, if you were tzad an ariba Shabbat, so then you think, yeah, you think that you've got a lion trapped. But if the lion doesn't agree that you have it trapped, you may rapidly find yourself to be the one that's trapped when hiding in the closet while the lion's tearing down the rest of the house. So don't think that you trapped the lion. So the only time that it would be considered to be nitzot, if it's a lion, is only achiyachniseno legurziki shelo. It would have to be put into an actual cage that would be sufficient to be able to hold a lion. But otherwise, it's not the fact that it happens to be in the house that's going to make any kind of difference to us.